This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On the Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
One of the things we've been struggling with so much during the revolt against the election is the role of the QAnon conspiracy theorists. QAnon diehards were in the vanguard in the assault on the Capitol, and a great many people are interested in or even sympathetic to their claims, including a couple of new members of Congress. And yet the term conspiracy theory, it doesn't quite cover the depths of QAnon. Its believers see Democrats not as a political party, as an opposition, but as a cabal of Satan-worshipping pedophiles who are going to be vanquished in a kind of holy war led by Donald Trump. How is something so fantastical, so deranged, so seemingly marginal come this close to the mainstream? The New Yorker's Monica Rasick has been looking into this.
I'm Monica Rasick. I'm the digital director at The New Yorker, which means I spend a lot of my time trying to figure out how to engage an audience. And QAnon, it has to be said, has certainly captivated an audience to a degree that's become extremely dangerous. For those fortunate enough not to know, QAnon is a conspiracy theory movement that started on 4chan, an internet message board, a user calling themselves Q, supposedly because they've got top secret Q-level security clearance, started posting these enigmatic messages. Things like, why did Soros donate all of his money recently? Fast forward 3 years later, and there's a huge community of people who work together to decode these messages. And what they believe Q is trying to tell them is that there's a massive international conspiracy of global elites that's threatening America. So I was doing a little bit of reading, and a colleague slacked me a Medium article by a game designer named Reed Berkowitz.
I am a game designer, and I research games and fiction and media. And so obviously when I saw what was going on with QAnon, it sparked my interest right away.
Reed makes alternate reality games, or ARGs, which are a kind of role-playing game that takes place partly online and partly out in the real world.
An alternate reality game is a game that often starts on a computer. Everybody is meeting online and getting large parts of the story online, but there's also many other components to it. So there's offline elements, there's parties, there's puzzles. It's a treasure hunt mixed with a good old-fashioned mystery story, usually.
So you start playing the game on your computer, but then maybe you get an email or even a phone call from a character in the game, and that sends you out into the real world to gather clues or interact with other players. ARGs are very good at drawing you in and immersing you in a world, and they've been used to promote everything from big Hollywood movies to video games to albums to McDonald's. When Reed looked at QAnon, he thought it seemed very familiar.
I wasn't the only one to recognize that. Many other ARG developers looked at it and saw and said, wow, this is an ARG or some form of an ARG. You know, we were all very upset because it was using our techniques to really hurt people.
How does QAnon resemble a game? What are the tools that are at play here?
Okay, well, the first one is that it's fiction. QAnon models itself after popular fiction. You have a mysterious figure who appears and it starts dropping you clues about, you know, a vast conspiracy that only you can solve. You're the hero. Somehow you're the one that's going to find the children that are in desperate need, or the government conspiracy, or anything else, and you're going to be able to find it because Q is going to give you what you need to do that.
Yeah, it like sets off on the classic hero's journey, essentially.
Classic,
right?
Yes.
You've been given a tip and you're off to the races.
And it also, I mean, the part of the hero's journey that gets everybody is the call to adventure. It's that moment where you leave the ordinary world and enter into the fictional world, which is so internal and exciting and meaningful. And that's what all game designers love, is that feeling, you know, when Alice drops down the rabbit hole. And Q uses that same iconography as well, even though that's a clear call to fiction.
And another thing you mentioned that I thought was interesting is that Q doesn't just tell you the story. Like in a game, you have to actually do something to move the story along.
You know, that's another one of the fictional elements, is that, you know, in a mystery, you're always uncovering the clues and following the signs. Clues are revealed. It's all done in questions and puzzles that you have to solve, just like in an alternate reality game.
Yeah, I thought that was one of the more interesting things, the idea that, you know, these clues are being left behind. Whoever could piece together the quote-unquote most likely reasoning behind it then essentially gets upvoted, you know, whether it's in forums or in conversations or in other chat groups. And that's becomes the canon of what's going on. And it's fascinating how, you know, that kind of groupthink creates this narrative.
I used to research role-playing games, not the Dungeons and Dragons style, but the online version where there's no rules. People just chat, right? The rules were social rules. They weren't statistics like in a, you know, a Dungeons and Dragons game. It was all based on social capital. And that social capital was based on what felt the best, who came up with the best story. It becomes really a creative project. You're solving something together with your friends. And when Q drops the clue, it's a good time, you know.
You kind of touched on this a little bit, but, you know, one thing I'm wondering, why go through all of this? Why doesn't Q just post, hey, everyone, here's the deal about this massive conspiracy? Why instead are they using the model of and the tools of this kind of game?
Oh, yeah. They're using the tools of the game because it binds people together. So not only does it give you a dopamine rush every time you solve problems or get kudos from your community, but it gives them the chance to surround you with a group of people that can guide you and keep you in the group. You know, even if something, you know, people are like, oh, well, that is wrong. That didn't happen. And you're in this community of people that is telling you, no, it did happen. You know what I mean? They've created a false universe for you, and you're in it. This becomes a community and an activity and a way of thinking, because once you apply it to the clues that Q has dropped, well, people learn that they can apply that to other things as well and do. So, you know, Q has joined all the other conspiracy theories and helped to amplify them, 5G, Bill Gates, Wayfair.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a sense that QAnon is a random phenomenon that's been seized on by a community and it's growing organically. But what we're talking about sounds very deliberate.
I mean, I think that there could have been organic roots to this game. I think that there's definitely organic pieces to the game. But to create those organic pieces, you need a lot of know-how.
And a lot of people and time.
Yeah.
And planning. And,
you know, if it was just a couple guys on the internet joking around, right? And suddenly, for some reason, they could afford to organize, you know, marches in all 50 states and create their own movie, you know, on top of this, you know, they're still producing content. A real producer, some college kid, they burn out within a month. I mean, even really well-funded campaigns burn out. I mean, Nonchalance or one of the other projects that went on for years, they're done. At a certain point, they can't sustain because it's, like you said, there's a lot of work. It's a lot of work.
So since you know the tools being deployed here, would it be possible to theoretically reverse engineer a game that uses the same tactics, but to discourage QAnon?
Yeah, I mean, I get asked this every once in a while, but when it comes down to it, I don't think, a game can be a solution for another game. Right? I think, the solution really is you've got a lot of people out there who are isolated, alone, disfranchised, and removed of any genuine experiences. And games are a way to provide that. You know, you play World of Warcraft, it makes you feel good about yourself, you meet new friends, you connect to the world, and you can change your you can try things out in your ego and say, oh, I was very brave. I go to school today. I feel a little bit better, you know. You're never going to beat Q because Q is not only, a very fulfilling way to look at the world, but they're saying it's real. So I think the solution is not necessarily another game, but what breaks down a game, which is community and building. So in many ways, I think it's almost the community more than the game itself that draws and keeps the Q players. So you would have to create a really nice, welcoming community with some fun things to do.
Right. And so not just, immediately ostracizing someone because they've fallen prey to this, but rather keeping them in the fold and in your circles.
Absolutely. Keep them close. Keep them close. That would be my advice. Just expose them to a lot of a lot of reality.
Reed Berkowitz is a founder of the multimedia company Cybernautics, and he directs the Curiouser Institute. He spoke with Monica Rasick, who's digital director of The New Yorker.